So today, by the mercy and potency of Sri Sri Gauranga, we'll be exploring and trying to come to terms with the reality that Krishna is our maintainer. This is a very big challenge, especially for grihasthas. In previous sessions, we've explored Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, the Daina section, humility and apana vedana, self-surrender at the lotus feet of Krishna. And we're looking more at a mood, developing a mood, developing an attitude. We're in pretty safe territory. But when we look into what we'll be discussing today, Krishna is our maintainer, and us having faith in that, we're talking about nitty-gritty of everyday life. How are we dealing with nitty-gritty of everyday life? And that is a challenge. So I wanted to begin by having a look at the first song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just a translation now. It's on page 30 of your book. By what personal understanding or by what power has one such as I come into your shelter? Surely it is by your mercy alone, for as Doya Moya and Patita Pavana, you are ever engaged in the deliverance of the fallen souls. My only hope, my Lord, is that you are full of compassion and mercy. There is no one in need of your mercy, more in need of your mercy than I. You will surely drive away all my fears. No one else in the world has the power to rescue me, O merciful Lord. By your decree, kindly deliver this vile and lowly sinner. I have given up everything and come to your lotus feet, O Lord. I am your eternal servant, and you are the maintainer. You are my sole protector, O Lord of the universe. So these are the two fears that he has. My maintenance, my protection. So he's turning, he has the courage to turn to Krishna for these things. And he's doing it, attempting to do it, as his sought-out servant. Everything is yours. I am merely your menial servant. So it is certain that you will deliver me. I have chosen your lotus feet as my only shelter. I no longer belong to myself. Bhaktivinoda weeps as he humbly takes shelter at your lotus feet, forgiving all his offenses, affording him a taste for the holy name. O kindly maintain him. So a hardcore materialist would see this as idealistic sentiment. The sentimentality. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very pragmatic. He's a Rupa Nuga. He's very pragmatic. He's a devoted realist. He's both things. He's devoted and he's a realist. He knows what he's talking about. And he's expecting us. He has expectations of us by giving us these bhajans. First expectation is that we know what we're looking at. Second expectation, that we know what we're doing, or rather, we know what we need to be doing. So what are we looking at? When we read this bhajan, one thing we have to be very, very aware of when we look at Prabhupada's purports, when we read the works of the acharyas, and in our ignorance and our ego, we forget about it, but it's important that we come to terms with it. That quite often, what we're looking at is for PhD literates. We at best are high school kids. What that means is we have to unpack what we read. To actually get the full benefit, especially practically speaking, we have to unpack what we read. So here, what are we looking at? Who are we looking at in this bhajan? What's the consciousness of a person who's factually accepted Krishna as his maintainer. We'll find that throughout Prabhupada's purports, I'm just going to refer to a couple from Bhagavad Gita, and not the whole purport, but just little sections of it. The first one that I read is from 422. A Krishna-conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained by their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but labors honestly as far as is in his power and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his honest labor. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. Prabhupada gives a bit more of an idea of the consciousness of such person in 421 purport. A Krishna-conscious person does not expect good or bad results in his activities. His mind and intelligence are fully controlled. He knows that because he's part and parcel of the Supreme, the part played by him as a part and parcel of the whole is not his own activity, but is only being done through him by the Supreme. This is a key sentence, I'll read it again. He knows that because he is part and parcel of the Supreme, the part played by him as a part and parcel of the whole is not his own activity, but is only being done through him by the Supreme. When the hand moves, it does not move out of its own accord, but by the endeavor of the whole body. A Krishna-conscious person is always dovetailed with a supreme desire. He has no desire for personal sense gratification. So someone who is of such a consciousness, he can factually be fully dependent on Krishna as his maintainer. It's a very, very evolved platform. It's not a cheap thing. And what is the realized understanding of such a person? We read so many things. Hopefully we read so many things in Prabhupada's books. But do we actually have realized understanding of what we're reading? But here, to have this evolution of consciousness that we've just read about in the ABC, Bhagavad Gita, there are certain things that we have to know and have realized understanding of. So let's, again, it's a very big topic, but we've just taken a few quotes to give us some sort of insight. And it's in your first handout, Krishna maintains everyone. Let's have a look at that. Just ask any questions as we go along that you may have. How's that? How is it that Krishna maintains everyone? What is the difference between God and us? The difference is that he is the maintainer and we are maintained. This is the difference. We are not maintainer. Nobody can say, one can say I am God, but nobody can say I am maintaining everyone. That is not possible. These are the simple definition of God given in the Vedic literature. Eko yo bahanam vidadati kamam. Katha Upanishad 2.2.13. We have necessities of life, but who is supplying the necessities of life? That eka, that one person, eka. God maintains all other living entities, that no one can maintain God. That is his Svachanda Shakti. He is not dependent on others. Someone may call himself independent, but he is still dependent on someone higher. The personality of Godhead, however, is absolute. There is no one higher than or equal to him. God is supplying everyone's needs. Either you're a cat, a dog, a demigod, President Johnson, or anyone. Everyone is dependent on God's supply. You cannot be independent. If God stops supplying, you cannot manufacture. If there is food grains, There is no food grain. You cannot chew your dollar notes. What do you do with your $100 notes? When Krishna wants to do something simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. The Lord explains this fact. Although he is a maintainer and sustainer of the entire material manifestation, he has not touched this material manifestation. Simply by his supreme will, everything is created, everything is sustained, everything is maintained, and everything is annihilated. Why should I depend on him? What is the difference between God and ourselves? God is also a living entity like us, but he is the chief living entity. He is maintaining all others. Therefore, we have to ask God, give us our daily bread. He is a maintainer, we are maintained. Just like in the family, the father is the maintainer, and the mother and the children and the servants, they are maintained. Similarly, the whole universe, whole creation, it is maintained by God. And we living entities within this universe, or within this creation, we are maintained. So as we are maintained, it is better to remain dependent on God than to declare our freedom. The Lord is eternally the maintainer of the living entities, both in our condition and in liberated situations. In reality, the Supreme Lord is always protecting us. The inmates of a prison are being punished by the government, yet the same government feeds them and looks after them. Similarly, sinful atheistic people, though punished by the Lord's illusory energy, Maya personified as Durga Devi, are still fed and cared for by the Lord himself. And if the Supreme Lord feeds and maintains even the worst sinners, retrobate, and hopeless souls, then what to speak of those who are eternally surrendered at his lotus feet? Sanatana means devotional service. The word Sanatana refers to that which is eternal, which does not change but continues in all circumstances. We have several times explained what the eternal occupational duty of the living being is. Indeed, it has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Surakhoi Krishna Nitya Das. The real occupational duty of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if one prefers to deviate from this principle, he remains a servant because that is his eternal position. But one serves Maya, the illusory material energy. He's my maintainer, how should I relate to him? We should not approach God as supplying agent. That is the lowest stage. He is supplying even to the cats and dogs. Then what is the difference between human beings and the cats and dogs? Just like a small child, he has supplied all necessities by the father, but when the child is grown, he wants to serve the father. Devotional service means that one does not do anything independently of the sanction of the acharyas. The actions of the Krishna consciousness movement are directed by the previous acharyas, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. In the association of devotees following these principles, a devotee is able to perfectly maintain his transcendental position. A devotee takes even an unfavorable condition to be the special favor of the personality of Godhead. Actually, there is no unfavorable conditions for a devotee. Knowing that everything is coming by the will of the Lord, he sees every condition as favorable. And in any condition of life, he is simply enthusiastic to discharge his devotional service. This devotional attitude is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. A devotee is never distressed in reverse conditions of life, nor is he overjoyed in favorable conditions. In the highest stages of devotional service, a devotee is not even concerned with the list of do's and do-nots. Such a position can be maintained only by following in the footsteps of your chariot. If a Vaishnava is completely engaged in devotional service, he need not be anxious for his maintenance. So how does Krishna maintain his devotees? He is like a king who takes proper care of his subjects, but who especially looks after the needs of his near and dear relatives. Therefore, it is not true that a comfortable life can be enjoyed only by those who perform ordinary pious activities, but not by devotees who are free from fruit of action and empirical knowledge. The devotees do not always suffer, for the Supreme Lord personally takes care of them. The devotees are the Lord's relatives and family members. Just as ordinary people feel joy and satisfaction when they look after the needs and comforts of their family, the Lord also feels pleasure when he tends to the well-being of his devotees. Thus the Supreme Lord is known as Bhakta Vatsala, the maintainer of the devotees. A devotee is automatically maintained by the Lord's mercy. A devotee's ordinary dealings and religious activities are also all dedicated to the personality of Godhead. Thus there is nothing but Krishna in a devotee's life. Krishna gives all protection and maintenance, and the devotee gives everything to Krishna. This natural liberated condition is called Krishna consciousness. The Lord fully maintains his unalloyed devotees, and he guides them progressively on the path toward devotional perfection. As a leader of his devotees, he ultimately awards the desired results of devotional service by giving himself to them. So this is the understanding, not just that he knows it, but this is the understanding of someone who actually has the faith, practical faith, day-to-day faith, to be able to experience and live the reality that Krishna is his maintainer. And such a realized person, he can sing Bhaktivinoda Thakura's second song with a fully confident heart. So let's have a look at that bhajan. It's quite an amazing bhajan. Second bhajan of the Gopatri Gaurana. Within my mind, I have always been anxious for the maintenance. It's on page 31. Within my mind, I have always been anxious for the maintenance of my wife and children, my own body and relatives. How will I earn money? How will I acquire fame? How will I arrange the marriages of my sons and daughters? Now, through self-surrender, I have been relieved of all anxiety. O Lord, surely you will provide for the maintenance of your own household. Recognizing me as your own servant, you will certainly maintain me. While rendering devotional service unto you, I feel the greatest happiness. So for this to actually be real, we have to be very, very fixed in the identity of being Krishna's servant. Understanding that everything we do has nothing to do with our identity, it's our activity. I am raising my children. I'm doing that with a lot of care and attention. I want them to be Krishna's children. But that doesn't make me mother. I'm doing my motherly duties as a service to Krishna. So when we can it's a subtle thing, but it's a simple thing. Whatever we're doing, whether it be producing a magazine or running a business, whatever we're doing, that's not our identity, that's our activity as a servant of Krishna. And when we have that understanding, then we can be confident because the sambandha is there, the relationship with Krishna is there, of master and servant. It's natural that if the servant is an honest, hard-working servant, a caring servant, then the master is going to take care of him. It's just a natural thing. So only then with this work, recognizing me as your own servant, how can Krishna recognize you as his servant if you're not? We may wear the dress, who may wear the dress, but what color is the heart? This is what Krishna's looking at. What color is the heart? Has our heart died? Is our whole persona? Are we living for Krishna? Are we living for Guru? Who are we living for? If we can honestly say, I'm living as Guru's servant. I'm doing my best to live as Guru's servant. Then because he's a representative of Krishna, Krishna's going to maintain you. By rendering devotional service unto you, I feel the greatest happiness. All events take place only by your will, O Lord. The deluded soul of this world declares, I'm the doer. But this is pure folly. What is a tiny soul actually able to do unless you act? The jiva can only desire to act. And unless you fulfill his desire by your own sweet will, you cannot do anything. Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. We cannot even die. We cannot independently die. Paramatmaji has to leave first. Only when he leaves can we leave. He's the boss. So even to die, we can't even do that independently. Everything is dependent on Krishna. And if we have if the relationship of a loving relationship is there, that is such an amazingly liberating thing. To realize that Krishna's in control, Krishna's maintaining everything. How much anxiety is out the window? How much anxiety is out the window if we can actually just get a drop of a taste of this understanding that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about? So what is a tiny soul actually able to do unless you act? The jiva can only desire to act. And unless you fulfill his desire by your own sweet will, he cannot do anything. Being free from all anxiety, I will humbly render service unto you. If any good or evil should occur while serving in your home, it will not be my responsibility. I'm servant, your master. It's your responsibility. Bhaktivinoda thus completely renounces his own independence. What a relief. What a relief to renounce your false independence. You know, how long can we go on pretending? How long can you live a lie? How long can you do that? Huh? When you renounce this madness, and engage in the exclusive service of your lotus feet with no other interest in life. Interesting thing to note here is that the externals may not change. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is writing these things, I think it was 1893. At that time, he's writing like this, but he's not walking out the door and leaving his, all those children, he's not walking out the door and leaving his wife. He's living what he's writing. He's realizing this, and he's doing that to give us guidance. Because in Kali Yuga, the safest protected ashram is Grihastha ashram. It's the safest, surest actually, ashram. So he's giving guidance how to live that as a surrendered devotee, a surrendered soul, someone truly having taken shelter of Krishna as maintainer. Any questions or comments about that? Yeah.
So, my mind thinks the first thing that my mind went to is, well, maybe that's possible for someone who's not working for a very demanding German or American firm that's demanding 60, 80 hours a week, you know. Mm-hmm. But then you think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his working in the courts and, you know, vast number of children and his bhajan and writing, and I mean Prabhupada's in a renounced position, but it's extraordinary, you know?
Yeah.
think, maybe if I was just doing part-time and it wasn't working in such a demanding...
We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's very interesting because... we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that at quite some length. So if you can give us just a couple of minutes and we'll go into that. Because there's a very interesting dynamic between the level of our faith and surrender and how Krishna maintains us. It's a very interesting dynamic. And there's some interesting points made by Prabhupada about that. So we'll take a look at it. Okay. So how can Bhaktivinoda Thakur be so confident that Krishna will always maintain him? How can he be so confident of that? No doubt he has a pure heart. Pure heart helps. A lot of those problems are solved by having a pure heart. But how does that pure heart see life? Let's have a look at this. This is Bhajan 4. Very, very beautiful bhajan. O youthful son, this is on page 33. O youthful son of the king of Braj, you are the lord of all lords. So he's interested in Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. We're not looking at a Vaikuntha model, we're looking at Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. O youthful son of the king of Braj, you are the lord of all lords. He's taking it right to the top. According to your will, creation and destruction take place in the universe. According to your will, Lord Brahma creates, and according to your will, Lord Vishnu maintains. According to your will, Lord Shiva destroys. And according to your will, Maya constructs the prison house of this world. According to your will, the living beings take birth and die. And according to your will, they will meet with prosperity and ruin, happiness and sorrow. So he's reminding himself of who the boss is and why he doesn't have to worry about maintaining himself if he realizes the potency and the mercy of his boss. The tiny soul bound up by Maya vainly struggles in the fetters of worldly desire. Without your sanction, he is unable to do anything. You are my only protector and maintainer. Except for your lotus feet, there is no other hope for me. No longer confident of my own strength and endeavor, I have become solely dependent on your will. Now, an important point to be aware of here, that doesn't mean that he doesn't do anything. To give up all confidence in our own strength and endeavor doesn't mean we don't do anything. To have become completely solely dependent on Krishna's will doesn't mean we don't do anything. It means that we are still active, but we're more in the mood of I'm yours. Bend me, shape me any way you want me, as long as you love me, it's all right. Yeah? It's more in that mood. You can see, like, with this kind of thing, you can't talk about this theoretically. We're talking about a state of heart. We're talking about a state of heart, someone who actually has a loving relationship with Krishna, which has been built up through taking a risk, little risk, seeing how Krishna reciprocates, feeling the strength of bond that comes from that, a little bit bigger risk, seeing how Krishna relates with that. Slowly, slowly, the heart is opening more and more to the reality that Krishna is my maintainer, Krishna is my protector. It's not an artificial thing. It's not a speculative thing. It's hardcore reality for those who live the path. Bhaktivinoda is most poor and his pride has been leveled. This is so beautiful. So what is that pride? What we're looking at is he's having realization of his actual position. False ego is being replaced by real ego. No room for pride of the kind that I had. It's a different reality. So in accordance with your will I live and I die. So you tell me what you want me to do. So this means there has to be some kind of rapport. There has to be some dialogue going on between the devotee and Krishna. It may be between the devotee and Guru. Or a member of the one of the associates of Parampara, but there's some kind of rapport going on for you to be able to have this kind, make this kind of statement. Any questions or thoughts about that? Let's hear this bhajan. It's very, very, very beautiful. Remembering that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote the rags. Unfortunately, these days it's very difficult to get the actual rag. Usually it's a guest. But occasionally hit the jackpot. But this one is very, very beautiful. Just have a listen, because when you know, like, it's not like he just wrote the words, but he gave the rag. So then you get the mood. It sets the mood for understanding. It gives heart entrance into it. Not working? Just try and absorb yourself in it.
তোমার ইচ্ছায় বিষে সৃজন সমা তুমি সর্বেশ্বরেশ্বর ব্রজেন্দ্র তোমার তোমার ইচ্ছায় বিষে সৃজন সমা
Because the world we live in is so debilitating for the heart, but it's a good thing to remind ourselves of the role of bhajan in our lives, because quite often, if we're at all involved with Prabhupada Nacharya's teachings, it's usually with tattva, and that has its place, but tattva's not going to take you back to Godhead. The heart has to be transformed. The heart has to be, it is very distorted. At the moment our hearts are very, very distorted. We're Kali Yugians. And our value structure, everything is very distorted. So to actually become servant of a devotee, actual servant of a devotee. We have to imbibe the mood of the devotee. So these bhajans are so very, very important every day. Every day. If we're singing even one or two bhajans a day, the heart is being shaped by Narottam Das Thakur. The heart is being shaped by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Isn't that better than having the heart shaped by lust, anger, greed? Just have it shaped by the acharyas. And this is actually, this will save us from so much bewilderment, so much getting caught up in the mass understanding, which is quite often wrong. The interesting thing about mass understanding is that quite often the M is silent. It's as understanding. You know, it's like that. For example, if you take Guru Vandana, if you sing that every day to your Gurudev, make the teachings emanating from your lotus mouth, one with my heart. So powerful. Just to have our heart shaped by the acharyas instead of all of this temporary trash around us. Just to take that time every day to sing a few bhajans. One or two. You're not looking at a lot of time. Just one or two bhajans to catch the mood of how a devotee feels. Sometimes we forget that, you know, devotional life, there should be some feeling. Yeah? It's about feeling. What's happening with the heart? You may say, no, there's so many slokas, you may know so many things, but what's happening at heart level? What's actually happening at heart level? Is it closing or opening? Is it opening as a deformed lotus? Or is it opening as a beautiful lotus? Fit to be a playground for Radha Shyam. What are we looking at? So it's such a very, very beautiful bhajan, but it is a little bit of beyond us right now. Just a little bit beyond us right now. So what's the next step for us? This is always a practical. Rupanuga is a very practical thing. So what's the next step for us? One thing we have to be very, very conscious of, because it will help us in our decision making. One thing we have to be very, very conscious of is that how Krishna maintains us will be influenced by the modes that govern us, level of our faith, so many things. And for him to practically maintain us, we have to provide him an avenue. Not that we just land at his feet and say, maintain me. But we have to look at ourselves honestly, where am I now? What's my faith level now? What's my advancement level now in relation to this question of maintenance, seeing Krishna as my maintainer? And then we, okay, Krishna, this is where I am now. This is the avenue that I feel I can work with right now. Then you have a point. You can't advance from an artificial platform. You have to look at where you are and then you start from there. Then you can grow. Am I making sense? Okay. So what does it really mean? It means we have to give him an avenue and we have to be honest about where we're at and work from there progressively. Now, to do all that, we have to have some idea of how Krishna has set things up. What's the value of having an independent plan if it's got nothing to do? You walk into a factory with your plan of how something's going to be made, but the factory's working on a completely different principle. What's the value of your plan? So we have to have an understanding, a little bit of an understanding, of how Krishna has set things up. This whole maintenance business, for those who are not yet on the platform of pure unalloyed devotee. So let's have a look at this. We're looking at the next handout. It's an interesting handout. and it's not a comprehensive statement. It's meant to basically just get you thinking and to shape your thinking in a way that will be helpful to you. So here we have a look at Krishna Loka, loving Krishna. Loving Krishna, serving Krishna. Material sky, loving matter, serving matter. Now one thing we have to come to terms with, that work is the flip side of Krishna seva. There in the spiritual sky, or here also, you can choose to serve Krishna. But if you don't make that choice, you're still going to have to work. Even to maintain your body. You have to bathe the thing, cook for the thing. You have to do so many things just to maintain the body. Isn't it? So let's have a look. We'll just go through this because there are so many things. You can see how because the general mass of people, they don't know Bhagavad Gita. So they don't know the basic principle. Bhagavad Gita is like the manual for living in this world. Everything comes with a manual. So this world comes with a manual. It's called Bhagavad Gita. People no longer have contact with that. Even in India, people no longer have contact with that. So they don't know the general principles of how to work this circumstance. So let's have a look first at work. The first thing that we're looking at, how am I going to work?
Is that loving Krishna is the flip side of work?
No. Serving Krishna, working is the flip side of serving Krishna. Because we're made to serve Krishna. So if we're not serving Krishna, we're going to be serving something. We're going to be working. It's interesting. You know, just getting a hold of a few little points like this. So let's have a look first just at work. In and of itself, just work. There are swine, dogs, camels, asses, etc., whose economic necessities are just as important to them as ours are to us. But the economic problems of these animals are solved only under nasty and unpleasant conditions. The human being is given all facilities for a comfortable life by the laws of nature because the human form of life is more important and valuable than animal life. Why is man given a better life than that of the swine and other animals? Why is a highly placed government servant given better facilities than those of an ordinary clerk? The answer is that a highly placed officer has to discharge duties of a higher nature. Similarly, the duties human beings have to perform are higher than those of animals, who are always engaged in simply feeding their hungry stomachs. We are given this human form of life not to work hard like asses, swine, and dogs, but to attain the highest perfection of life. If we do not care for self-realization, the laws of nature force us to work very hard, even though we may not want to do so. This last statement is a very, very powerful statement. If we do not care for self-realization, the laws of nature force us to work very hard, even though we may not want to do so. So, here we're understanding that we have to make a choice, a careful, conscious choice about the kind of work we engage ourselves in. And we can only do that, practically speaking, factually, if we're in good association. Are we going to make the right choice? Only if we're in good association are we going to make the right choice. The other thing that we can be very aware of is, and we don't often think of this, but it's such a liberating key, is that I can also work hard to become Krishna conscious. That kind of work, that kind of hard work, is acceptable as a form of work by Krishna. So this is interesting, particularly for grihasthas, because if you apply it to that circumstance, then it may read something like, I perform all my activities responsibly on the work front, but it's not where I put my focus. It's not where I put my essential energy. That I put into my Krishna conscious activity. I'm not neglecting the other, but I'm not seeing it as the essence of what's maintaining me. Once I get an idea that it's not the boss and his paycheck that's maintaining me, they are an avenue for Krishna to maintain me, because I don't have the faith that yet that Krishna will maintain me directly. Yeah? So they're an avenue at this stage. But I should be trying, I should be working towards developing that full faith in Krishna. I should be working on that. So that means that I'm going to get up at the right time to go to work, I'm going to go there clean shaven, I'm going to do all the right things, I'm going to take the work responsibly. But it's not where I'm going to put my focus. It's not going to be the essence of my life is going to work every day. The essence of my life is going to be my time with Nam, my time with Bhagavatam, my time with Kirtan and the devotees. It's going to be like that. Is that making sense? Okay, now another thing about Krishna's way of doing things is, and this is very foreign these days, a concept of austerity for pleasing Krishna, concept of sacrifice for pleasing Krishna. We only perform austerity in the sacrifice to increase our sense gratification. That's what it's about, right? But it's not the way Krishna works. Not the way Krishna thinks. Let's have a look at the next little one on sacrifice. These are just to give you a few clues, a few keys to work with. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. That is a whole program for the conditioned soul. In the age of Kali, the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures, and this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment rarely eat only sin. The devotees of the Lord in Krishna consciousness offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections, which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. The Lord can be satisfied by sacrifices. Therefore, one who cannot perform them will find himself in scarcity. That is the law of nature. Yajna, specifically the Sankirtan Yajna prescribed for this age, must therefore be performed to save us at least from scarcity of food supply. So what we're reading here is that, okay, in other ages, other forms of sacrifice, but there are two, only two, such a compensation for we unfortunate souls. Just simple thing. Sankirtan, primary. Ask yourself, every day, am I involved in Sankirtan? Am I performing that yajna for Krishna's pleasure? And the backup, the support, the secondary yajna or Rosh Hashanah. Both do is enough. In this age, you can go back to Godhead just by what you do with the mouth. It's a door of mouth is a door of liberation in this age. Real liberation. Krishna praying. I just want to read you something from Harinam Chintamani. Very interesting. It's right in chapter 1 where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining in the words of Haridas Thakur to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu why we should perform Nam Sankirtan in this age. In such a yuga, O Lord, you purified so many seers in their discipline of meditation, giving them the treasure of devotion. In Shraddha Yuga, you purified many through the performance of sacrifice. And in Dwapara Yuga, you distributed devotion through temple worship. O Master, with the arrival of the age of Kali, you saw the jiva's misfortune and abandoned all hope in the paths of karma, jnana, or yoga. In this age, we lead short lives of great misery, are weak and less intelligent, and are swallowed up by so many disturbances and disruptions. Vanashram Dharma, Sankhya Yoga practice, and the cultivation of knowledge are incapable of delivering the jivas of this age from their bondage. The indirect paths of devotion through karma and jnana are so full of traps and thorns that they have become no path at all. Taking up means other than bhakti to reach the supreme end of life simply fills the lives of the jivas with more and more obstacles. O Lord, you always have the jiva's welfare in mind. Thus in this age of Kali, you descended into this world bringing your holy name with you. You preach the chanting of the holy name as a religious duty for this age. By following this as the main means, one attains the treasure of Krishna Prem. Now, because of the kind of minds we have, we all say, yeah, that's fine. But he's not saying Braj Prem. We have that kind of mind. You know, well, yeah.
Can you say again where you were quoted?
Yeah, this is from chapter 1 of Harinam Chintamani. But there's a very interesting statement made by Mahaprabhu and when he's speaking to Sanatana Goswami. It's verse 119 of chapter 21. Very amazing. I mean, we are so thick. Why can't we understand that all we really have to do... You know Prabhupada's kiss formula? You know his kiss formula? Keep it simple, sadhu. Keep it simple, sadhu. You don't have to get complicated. It doesn't have to be complicated. Just put your heart and soul into Nam. Back it up by taking Ali Prashad. Control that nasty tongue of yours that's getting into trouble all the time. You listen to what Mahaprabhu says. The transcendental mellows generated from the dealings between the Gopis and Krishna cannot be tasted by fruitive activity, yogic austerity, speculative knowledge, regular devotional service, mantra yoga, or meditation. This sweetness can be tasted only through the spontaneous love of liberated persons who chant the holy names with great ecstatic love. Nam, it's all about Nam in this age. Simple thing. Best thing to do, you come home from work. Hell of a day. Take a shower. Even if it's just 10 minutes kirtan. You just drop all that madness you've had to tolerate all day. And get back into real life. Isn't it? So it's... are we making sense? Is it making sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, any questions?
Just thinking about that story of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Shivas Thakur. Talking about his maintenance. That's just so inscrutable, you know. It's just like... If I don't if everything isn't provided by the time I clap my hands three times, I'll have drawn myself in the Ganges or something like that.
Yeah, amazing level of consciousness.
With a vast family and relatives and who knows what else.
So much. Okay. Now, if we're human, we're not just looking at work. We're looking at prescribed duties. And if we're looking at prescribed duties as a devotee, it'll include devotional prescribed duties. Rising early, taking bath, all those kind of things. So let's just have a look at this. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Work for material satisfaction must be given up, but activities which promote one's spiritual activity, like cooking for the Supreme Lord and offering the fruit to the Lord, and then accepting the fruit, are recommended. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. One who is in Krishna consciousness should not give up earning money out of fear if he is performing fruitive activities. If by working one can engage his money in Krishna consciousness, or if by rising early in the morning one can advance his transcendental Krishna consciousness, one should not desist out of fear or because such activities are considered troublesome. Such renunciation is in the mode of passion. The result of passionate work is always miserable. If a person renounces work in that spirit, he never gets the result of renunciation. Oh Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, this renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Prescribed duties must be performed with this mentality. One should act without attachment for the result. He should be disassociated from the modes of work. A man working in Krishna consciousness in a factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna. And when he gives up the result for Krishna, he is acting transcendentally. So again, we're looking at relationship. To be able to work on this platform, there has to be a relationship with Krishna. When it's approved, we're actually working for him. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it imperfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should never give up the work born of his nature, son of Kunti, even if such work is full of faults. The intelligent renouncer, situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work, nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. A person in Krishna consciousness or in the mode of goodness does not hate anyone or anything which troubles his body. He does work in the proper place and at the proper time without fearing the troublesome effects of his duty. Such a person situated in transcendence should be understood to be most intelligent and beyond all doubts in his activities. So what we're looking at here, these three, especially sacrifice and prescribed duties, we're looking at someone who's in human form and is on the progressive path. But where's that progressive path leading to? It's hopefully leading, if they're appropriately working on things, it'll be leading us to feel of Krishna. So then we're looking no longer at work. We're no longer looking at sacrifice. I'm on the mental platform and making choices. This is difficult, but I'm doing it because I know it will be pleasing the Guru. This is difficult, but I'm doing it because I know it's my duty. That's good, but it's not still mental platform. It's not beyond that. But then, when it becomes what we're looking at, all of this has no value. What we've just read has no value unless it's leading us to real life. Sacrifice of love. Sacrifice of love. And this is so beautiful. We can read a little bit about it from Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. It's on the same page, sacrifice of love. The devotees of the Supreme Lord, or the persons who are in Krishna consciousness, are called shantas, and they are always in love with the Lord. The shantas, being always in the compact of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the giver of all pleasures, or Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or Krishna, the all-attractive person, and catch Prabhupada's mood, he's a shanta. He's immediately going into names of Krishna. Cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. Cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. He loves him. You love somebody, you want to give it to them, isn't it? First, you take. Therefore, such devotees always perform yagas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, archanam, etc. And these performances of yagas keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination and simple association in the material world. That's not their preoccupation. Their preoccupation is Krishna. But can you see, just by that absorption in Krishna, that love for Krishna, and everything they do is a yogi. There's no sense of it being a yogi. But everything becomes an offering to Krishna, whether it be their hearing, whether it be their chanting, whether it be their puja, whatever they're doing, it's an offering to Krishna, sacrifice of love. I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me, the wise who perfectly know this, engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. This is the difference between the shantra and us. We also worship Krishna. But they do it with all their hearts. How many times do you catch yourself thinking of somebody else while you're offering your gina to Krishna? Something to think about. But here, all their hearts, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Where do our thoughts dwell? The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is what, not that we're just following a dry ritual and we do that till we drop. That's not what we're looking at. What we're looking at is a progressive path. And we should be asking ourselves every day, have I moved a little, just maybe a millimeter towards that path? Closer to being living a sacrifice of love. And we're not talking plastic smile sacrifice of love. We're talking Prabhupada's style. Look at Prabhupada's life of sacrifice of love. Where you have prem, we always have to remember the other side of the coin. What is it? Compassion. We see it in full bloom in Prabhupada's life. Thank you, Stephanie. Did you want to say something? You see? So it's just such a beautiful thing. Any questions or thoughts about
that? Can you say again about the other side of compassion? The compassion with the other side of
praying.
Yeah, they can't. This is actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks a lot about this in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that you cannot actually separate the two. So all the talk about prem, but where's the compassion?
I have a question.
Sure.
This is on this prescribed duties. As you mentioned, that whatever our spiritual duties also.
Right.
So that is also
prescribed duties. Yeah.
So when it is said that therefore one should not give up the work born of his nature So in this particular case, what is its purpose or Krishna?
There he's talking in terms of, he's not talking about a prescribed duties as a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
That's independent of our nature, of our innate nature, conditioned nature. But what we're looking at is that you can't artificially choose a work. If you have the qualification by nature of a kshatriya, you're a leader, born leader. You have a good way of, you know, working with people and managing things. Why are you going to take a sutra activity? You're not going to do that.
I always get, it's more maybe technical part of it, but I get confused on that. Like, generally we hear that, if someone is serving someone, it's like more like the
sutra.
So,
but see, there's a subtlety involved here. We always have to be aware of the subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can only do that if we are aware that we have to know the tattva. But more important, practically speaking, is that we understand the working principle behind the tattva.
Mm-hmm.
How the thing works.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what you're looking at, you've got this concept, which has probably been fed to you a million times, that to have a boss means you're a sudra. Right. But doesn't it depend on your consciousness? If before you go to work, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're hearing about Krishna, before you go to work, you're offering your day to Krishna, you're offering yourself to Krishna, then who's your boss? You caught it?
Yeah.
Yeah? It's a subtle thing, but we have to be aware of that. The person that's in the position of your boss, he may have the modes to teach you the lessons you need to learn that Krishna wants you to learn at this time, but he's not your boss. Krishna's your boss. Is that okay?
And also the ISKCON Society, I was just complaining to you about this the other day, the ISKCON Society donates to sannyasis, but if a grihasta is doing some brahminical work, people are not, you know, like I was telling you the other day, there's some young man, grihasta in Russia, and he plays wonderful mridanga, and he's got a pack of kids at home and a wife, and they all need to be, you know, the rent needs to be paid and everything needs to be clothed and fed. And the sannyasis come and, you know, come traveling with me. I need you to play mridanga. And that's lovely and he loves to do it. But, you know, nobody offers him a donation for that work, which is brahminical work, because he's a grihasta. I think it's a little bit of a, you know, disconnect in our society that people will not donate to a grihasta for doing the same.
That's, you know, that is always very interesting. What, you know, what I find personally, I'll share it with you, is that to stay sane at this historical social stage at ISKCON, we have to run on two tracks. One, we have to be very clear about what's happening at this stage of historical and social evolution of the institution. We're in baby stage. A lot of mistakes being made, a lot of, you know, inebriety, so many things. And then the other track is we have to keep our focus, our personal focus, our personal path very, very clear and not be impeded in following that path by the other track. We have to be able to run both, because then if we are aware, if we have our own, we have our goal, we have our focus, we have whatever our bhajan we're doing, then we have the force to cut through the illusory stuff that's presented all the time in the name of Prabhupada said. And the other side of it, if we keep things in historical and social perspective, then we have the tolerance and the patience to keep plodding. You know, so the both the things are there. The other thing I want to say, which has to be taken into consideration, is that we can't afford to take everything at face value.
Because even though our young Madanga player is not receiving donations when he's traveling and playing Madanga, when sannyasis are getting the donations, Krishna will maintain him. Because he's doing his service, he's doing his prescribed duties, and he's serving more evolved, spiritually evolved people, Krishna will maintain him. You know, I've had personal experience of that so many times. One famous time was when I was instructed to go for a collection marathon in Bara Bazaar in Calcutta, which was like worse than hell, for my preaching project. 1 month marathon in that place. There had been a lot of inappropriate preaching done in that area, and I spent more money than I collected because I had to do so much patching up of, you know, like so many people had given checks, never seen the guy again, or given cash, you know, like, and I had people slamming doors in my face, and then going back again, and, you know, going with prasad and going with photos, and it was a yagya. It was a real yagya. But I could see that this is why Krishna sent me here. It was hell. The place itself is hell. But, and the people were, you know, quite hostile to start with. So we did that for a month. But before I went, I just thought, well, you know, I'm going to do this because this is what, you know, I've been told to do. But I think I'll just throw out a fundraiser letter. So I think I sent it to 35 people or something. And I didn't really have a lot of hope in it, but I got inspired to do it and I did it. So we finished the month's horror story, did a lot of parachat preaching, and came back to Mayapur, and that mail out had raised over 7 lakhs in a month. So, you know, it wasn't that, I shouldn't have wasted my time with all that preaching in Calcutta, it was so hellish and such austere conditions, and, you know, no, Krishna reciprocated in that way. He had that avenue.
Carry what you left.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So he will always do that. You know, and this is another thing that we have to be very, very aware of. 17th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. Your faith is determined by the modes that govern you. You want to increase your faith in Krishna as your maintainer, you have to be careful about the modes that govern you. Modes that govern you, that means, what am I eating? What's my circumstance? What's the workplace like? What's the home front like? So you see, so many things we have to pull into gear. And while we're talking about that, this is a very important point that we don't think about enough. And there's a lot of serious repercussions for us as individuals and as a society because of it. It's not only about what you do, it's about how you do it. So I want to take a little transcendental guidance in this regard. Let's have a look at the handout called Practical Principles for Human Perfection. This is from Pulaski, I think, Bhagavatam 7. It's a big side one. Now, even, you know, like, if you take this just as a little checklist for yourself, it's very simple. But it's so pleasing to Krishna. You can satisfy him just by little new principles. Okay, let's have a read of them. These are the general principles to be followed by all human beings. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, observing fast on certain days of the month, bathing twice a day, tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, control of the mind, control of the senses, non-violence,
celibacy, charity, reading of scripture, simplicity, satisfaction, rendering service to saintly persons, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements, observing the futility, the unnecessary activities of human society. Interesting, right? Remaining silent and grave and avoiding unnecessary talk. Considering whether one is body or the soul. Distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals. Seeing every soul, especially in the human form, as a part of the Supreme Lord. Hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a shelter of the saintly persons. Chanting about these activities and instructions. Always remembering these activities and instructions. Trying to render service. Performing worship. Offering obeisances. Becoming a servant. Becoming a friend. And surrendering one's whole life. O King Yudhisthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's important to keep tab on this kind of guidance that's given by Bhagavatam, because it's so easy to get carried away with what's happening around you. And what's happening around you? In Kali Yuga, put very bluntly, you get a choice to be an animal or a machine. This is what the society offers. You look at the living and working conditions of most people, especially working conditions, animal or machine. So then if you want to save yourself from being sucked into that hellish illusion, which is got a very nasty real edge on it, then you have to have some guidance. Well, how am I supposed to act in this madhouse? How would Krishna like me to act in this madhouse? Other people might not like it. Especially I find the one remaining silent and grave and avoiding unnecessary talk. Everybody wants to talk to you. You can't walk by somebody without them being offended if you don't stop and talk to them. Oh! Yeah. But can you see? So, like, just these little things. Maybe just every now and again read it through and see how you're going. You know? And this is just talking human. This is not talking Vaishnava. We're not talking, you know, this is just talking being human. Any thoughts or comments about it?
I'm reminded of a quote. It's not from our tradition, but it's a parallel. And it comes to mind that there was a Jewish man in the concentration camp, and there was a Nazi guard standing over him with a gun, and the task was they were shoveling human excrement, you know, and the Nazi guard was taunting him, saying, "Where is your God now?" And the man replied by saying, "He's right here in the muck with me."
So, wow. Fun,
you know,
yeah.
Like, who are you working for?
Yeah.
You know,
beautiful.
I was appreciating your comment in the beginning that these writings of Srila Prabhupada and Acharya as a postgraduate, we need to unpack them. And sometimes the perspective that we have of them about being maintained, or we have our particular perspective of it, and we may base it on what we've read, but there may be another perspective. Mm-hmm. I remember a story I just read recently. Some of the devotees who had gone to Mayapur in the very early days, there's a group of devotees, and they said something like 8 out of 10 of the devotees, the Western devotees, were sick because of the water. I mean, everybody had dysentery and malaria and this and that. Everyone was really sick and really, really miserable. So there's one morning walk, and the devotees are going along with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada stopped at one point and he said, a devotee never suffers. And everybody was really quiet for a long moment because they're all Prabhupada saying today, and Prabhupada could see their faces and he could understand. And Prabhupada said, anyway, what is this one lifetime? I was just thinking so much about that, and there's just two different perspectives. Prabhupada didn't consider that suffering to be very significant. But for the devotees, they couldn't equate. How is Prabhupada saying there's no such thing as suffering? I'm going to the toilet 5 times an hour.
Yeah. Okay. So now I'm going to take a look at Bhagavad Gita's third bhajan. This is really something. Let's have a read through it. It's on page 32. Really something. Now that I have surrendered all that I possess under your lotus feet, I throw myself down before your house. You are the master of the house. Kindly consider me your own dog. Chanting me nearby, you will maintain me, and I shall lie at your doorstep. I will not allow your enemies to enter, but will keep them outside the bounds of the surrounding moat. Whatever food remnants your devotees may leave behind after honoring your prasad will be my daily substance. I will feast on those remnants in great bliss. By sitting up or lying down, I will constantly meditate on your lotus feet. Whenever you call, I will immediately run to you and dance in rapture. I will never think for my own nourishment. I will remain absorbed in ever-cherishing love for my master. Bhakti Vinod now accepts you as his only maintainer. Mm-hmm. So if a dog has a good master, he has no problems with his maintenance or protection. Life's a breeze if he just does what the master wants him to do and does it very easily. Like pass in the house or something. He's got it made. Okay, so it's such an amazing mood that Bhakti Vinod Thakur is giving here. But probably again a little bit beyond what we can relate to at our stage. But how can we relate to it at our stage? I want to share something with you from Guruji Maharaj, which has always touched me very deeply. It's the last of your handouts. It's called "May I Always Remain Srila Prabhupada's Dog." It's exquisitely beautiful. Every morning when Srila Prabhupada was in Bombay, he used to walk on Jupiter Beach. One morning I'd been feeling especially wretched and miserable. Although so many other devotees were present, Srila Prabhupada began to speak as if addressing me personally. He quoted a Sanskrit verse and spoke about two words, Anath and Sanath. Nath means master, so Anath means without a master, and Sarnath means with a master. The whole goal of life is to become Sarnath with a master. In the morning on Juhu Beach, many gentlemen used to walk their dogs. Srila Prabhupada pointed to a fat and fit gentleman walking with an equally fat and fit dog. The man was walking briskly and confidently with his dog on a leash. And the dog was walking equally briskly and confidently with his master by his side. Srila Prabhupada commented that every dog wants a good master. If the dog has a good master, the dog is happy. He holds his head high, he wags his tail. He knows that his master will maintain and protect him, so he has no anxiety. Srila Prabhupada then pointed to some stray dogs. They have no master. They don't know where they will sleep, how they will get food. Other dogs bark at them, children throw stones at them. They're always in anxiety. So Prabhupada stopped walking. He planted his cane firmly in the sand of Jupiter Beach. Although I stood behind many of the devotees and moved close around him, with his eyes laden with love and compassion, he looked into my eyes. So we should be sanath, protected, not anath, orphan. We should have our master and be exclusively devoted to him. Then we will feel confident in his protection and always be happy. Although I have caught some of the words from the verse in Srila Prabhupada's explanation, I very much wanted to find the verse but could not. Then several years later, I came across the same verse quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 1, 206. By serving him constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent, eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? So this is a very exquisite verse. It's from Stotaratna by Jumanacharya. But the significant things for us, that these are the first words that Rupa Sanatan spoke to Mahaprabhu when they remet, and Ram Kelly. These are the first words. And it's so exquisite how they're revealing the depth of their love for Mahaprabhu, the depth of their desire for him to accept them as his servants. Mm-hmm. How is that shown in the verse? He's saying, you're permanent, eternal servant. Not just your eternal servant and sometimes serving you, sometimes not. Mm-hmm. Permanent, eternal and permanent servant, please. It's so beautiful. Reading the pulpit, I found the same instructions Srila Prabhupada had given on Juhu Beach. Just thinking, just as a dog or servant is very satisfied to get a competent, perfect master, or as a child is completely satisfied to possess a competent father, so the living entity is satisfied by completely engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. He thereby knows that he is to be a competent master to save him. He therefore knows that he has a competent master to save him from all kinds of danger. Now, whenever I walk on Juhu Beach, I see the different types of dogs, with those masters and those without. I remember Srila Prabhupada's instructions, and I pray that I will always remain Srila Prabhupada's dog. It's so beautiful, you know. So this idea, it's so exquisite. Just the idea, but can you see, you're getting some feeling for what the heart of a person who's experiencing Krishna as his maintainer. It's not something you can do in a dry, arbitrary way. There has to be a relationship. There has to be a relationship of love and trust. That trust, and not only that Krishna, we have trust in Krishna. Krishna has to trust us. He may reveal things to us. How are we going to deal with that? Look what I've got that you haven't got. How are we going to deal with that? Krishna wants to see how we deal with that. Now that's a two-way street. Two-way street. Krishna sent the scenario. Okay, you may be a fully realized soul. You may be in your loving relationship with Krishna or with Mahaprabhu or with your Gurudev. But don't forget what I want. I want that until you breathe your last breath, you behave as a neophyte devotee following the regulative principles. This is what I want. I don't want any disturbance in my mission or amongst my devotee. So two-way. We have to develop our love and trust for Krishna, and he has to develop his trust in us. He's going to do that. How? It's not just Srada the Prem, escalator ride. Every step tests. End of grade one, tests. You going to pass it? No? Okay, you stay here. We'll do it again. Krishna's very patient. Step two. Oh, we're not ready for grade two. Okay, back to grade one. Test. It's not escalator. Making sense? Okay, so let's go back to step one and get a feel for step one. We're talking bhajan one. So let's go back to bhajan one and we'll hear it now. We only read it last time. Sure.
This is this thing about being the dog of Krishna. We had this experience in Jagannath Puri some time back. We always have a very emotional experience usually with the Western devotees who come because they love Jagannath, but they can't go inside the temple. Mm-hmm. And so one year we had some Russian devotees, and we were doing kirtan in front of the temple, and then at one point I stood in a rickshaw and I gave a little talk. And I told the devotees, I said, well, we can't go inside the temple because we're dogs. And dogs can't go inside the temple. I said, but don't feel bad, we're Jagannath's dogs. And then I said, yeah, we should offer a dandavat pranams in the street. And we offered some prayer to Jagannath. And when I got up, there was a strange thing. There was a panda standing right in front of me with a basket. And he said, and he told me exactly this in perfect English. He said, you take this, Jagannath sent this to you. I was surprised. I looked inside the basket, and it was Mahaprasad, but not just any Mahaprasad. It was, I could recognize it was from the Balya Bhog offering, which they offer very little. Only a few select pandas get that. So the devotees were doing kirtan by then. After a minute, I stopped them again, and I told them, I said, so what does the dog do? The dog stays outside. And he jumps up and down and he barks. That's what we're doing, chanting it. And then what does the master do? He throws a little bit of food to the dog. He says, so see what Jagannath has sent us.
Beautiful. So we'll read it through once, just to remind ourselves of the meaning, and then we'll hear a little bit and then join in the singing. By what personal understanding or by what power has one such as I come into your shelter? Try and imbibe the mood of this first introductory song as we hear it. Surely it is by your mercy alone. For as Doya Moya Patita Kavan, you are ever engaged in the deliverance of the fallen souls. My only hope, O Lord, is that you are full of compassion and mercy. There is no one more in need of your mercy than I. You surely drive away all my fears. No one else in the world has the power to rescue me. O merciful Lord, by your decree, kindly deliver this vile and lowly sinner. I have given up everything and come to your lotus feet, O Lord. I am your eternal servant, and you are the maintainer. You are my sole protector, O Lord of the universe. Everything is yours. I am merely your menial servant. So it is certain that you will deliver me. I have chosen your lotus feet as my only shelter. I no longer belong to myself. Bhaktivinoda weeps as he humbly takes shelter at your lotus feet, forgiving all his offenses, affording him a taste for the holy name, or kindly maintain him. Let's hear a couple of verses and then we'll join him.
Pavana, Pati pavana otita tarone rata varosaya mare matana tumi to karuna mai tab daya patra nahi mor sama avasa gochave ba
avasa gochave ba.